Well, you all have Mother Nature to thank for the fact that you're going to hear a full live show today. Organic, live, new content. You're welcome. Baseball doubleheader tomorrow. Going to be a long day for yours truly. Well, watch me, Big 12 Now, ESPN Plus. We have Kelis Romanek coming on the show today. And I'm going to start here today, unfortunately, with some negative news. A lot of basketball talk this week. We'll still be talking a lot of basketball. Certainly, Kelis and I will. But K-State suffers a recruiting blow today in football in the form of Carson Willich committing to, drum roll please, Iowa State. So this is one that hurts. If you are somebody that follows recruiting, you've been clued in on this for a while. Not that Iowa State was going to be the destination. I think that came up pretty quickly today. But Willich had been a name, 2022 outside linebacker out of the Kansas City area, that had been mentioned for a while as somebody that like had some K-State fandom in his blood from the time that he was growing up. And obviously he's from Blue Springs, so Kansas City area, KC Metro. Somebody that K-State had been chasing for a really long time. And he commits not only not to K-State, but he commits to Iowa State and Nathan Shielhouse, who's killing it in Kansas City right now for the Clones. Now, if you go look up this kid's Rivals profile right now, he's a 5'4", two-star. Like, it, you know, the rating, I think, would go up eventually in his offer list. I mean, he has Iowa State, K-State, Kansas, Minnesota, Northwestern, Washington State. Like, that's a better offer list than what his profile actually represents here. But this isn't so much about like, hey, this is like a five-star kid that you missed out on. It's that, hey, this is somebody that it seemed like you were in a really good position to grab and is from the Kansas City area, and then you lost him to Iowa State. See, to me, this is all about the cumulative effect of that. It's not even so much what I'm seeing a lot of discussion about from the fans who do really follow this stuff very closely, which is like back into meltdown mode about Klieman and the staff and recruiting and what it means for that. I'm not spiraling that much down like a death hole as far as what I think about the future of recruiting and what these guys actually are and on and on. It's more to me about the concern of, okay, yes, I do have some level of concern that they weren't able to reel in this kid and Carson Willich. It does feel like it's been a while since K-State has had some real recruiting momentum. I am moderately concerned about that. I am majorly concerned about what Iowa State is doing in the positive, because Iowa State is a real problem here. Much as we have made fun of them for a very long time, Campbell has this thing figured out, at least to the point where they are going to be seven and five, right? I mean, but they will be a 7-5 or better program for the foreseeable future here. They continue to recruit very well, and they continue to recruit Kansas kids and kids from the Kansas City area very well, and they, frankly, are winning head-to-head recruiting battles with K-State, and they are devoting more resources to their program than what K-State is doing right now. I know that that's my particular drum that I've just been beating for a long time, but I'm going to continue to do it because they are doing a really nice job of it. It just, everything that's happening right now with Campbell's program, to me, is indicative of, like, they're doing exactly what they need to be doing right now. Like, they're doing exactly what I wish K-State was doing. Like, what I'm seeing Campbell and Iowa State put together right now is, like, what I wish K-State's program would be. Now, Campbell has, I mean, he had a head start on Chris Klieman, so not fair to compare them completely equally here right now. Chris Klieman also had a pandemic, get thrown in the middle of like the initial uptick of his program and lost his starting quarterback for the year last year. There has been some adversity that hasn't necessarily been there or wasn't necessarily there for Campbell at first. But boy, if K-State is going to become that, it's going to be much more difficult if Iowa State really does have this thing up and running and humming. And it's just like every sign, everywhere you look, Iowa State shows another positive sign of what it is that they're doing and what it is that they're building. I mean, let us not forget, Iowa State's best player last year is a running back from Wichita. We're talking about this dude being a potential Heisman finalist. He's a running back from Wichita that Bill Snyder's staff at the time just didn't put much attention into. He turns into a total stud. They're doing things the way that you would be doing them if you were K-State at its peak. Like, I mean, Bill Snyder at its peak in the late 90s, early 2000s, like there's a stud running back in Wichita. He's coming to K-State. And in some cases, he's coming to K-State to be an All-Big 12 safety, like Rashad Washington. And you get all of those dudes. You're keeping more guys at home. You're building talent. You're the exciting place to go in the area. Iowa State is doing it. Now, they have not won at the level that Snyder did at that point in time. I still don't think that they will, but what I think Campbell has here is a program that's going to consistently be between 7 and 9 wins per year. And this just continues to show me more evidence that they have major league steps on K-State. I was combining head start and steps. They have a big-time head start on where K-State wants to be. And I just, you know, you can say, well, just worry about yourself. You can't be worrying about comparing yourself to other programs. Well, it's not about comparing K-State to Iowa State necessarily. It's about just scarcity of resources, like a scarcity of resources around the area, whether it's Kansas or Kansas City, regional recruiting. There are only going to be so many kids that you have a realistic, legitimate chance at, and you're going to be going up against Iowa State for virtually every single one. And right now, Iowa State has the juice. They've got the juice. I'm not saying it's easy to go out and win recruiting battles with Iowa State right now based on the fact that they did just make the Big 12 title game and they won the Fiesta Bowl? They played in the Fiesta Bowl this past year. You know, they won a major bowl game. Like, they have a lot more juice. Matt Campbell is fun and exciting and a player's coach and rightly or wrongly has been adored by the national media for, you know, going on like 4 years now. Back to that first win that they had over Oklahoma in Norman. So they've got it. You've got to find a way to take it from them. And that's a tall task, and it seems to be getting taller every time we look. And today, the latest bit of evidence for that was Carson Willich. I don't like it. I don't like it mainly because I'm seeing this big fat Iowa State logo here. Just feel, Mitch, like they are turning into the program that you really hope and want K-State to be right now, which makes it so much more difficult for you to do it yourself.
Well, maybe Willich just didn't want to wear a power cat anymore, because at Blue Springs High School, they wear power cats. You got a big power cat. It's just a tad off of the Bill Snyder power cat. But anyway, that's what they wear at Blue Springs, Missouri. I know that because of Middlebrook that used to play at K-State for women's basketball. But I'm with you. I don't like it either. I don't think any K-State fan likes it, because Kansas City is a true recruiting battleground with your rivals. I mean, KU wants guys out of Kansas City. Iowa State wants guys out of Kansas City. Missouri wants guys out of Kansas City. It's just right there smack dab in the middle of all these Power 5 schools that kind of feel like they're at the same level in their conferences. I mean, you could throw Arkansas in there as well. Just kind of anybody that surrounds Kansas City, they're going after Kansas City guys. That's just the way recruiting works. But, I mean, the big first blow I can remember with Iowa State, Matt Campbell and Coach Klieman battling out for a guy, Hayden Pauls. And that was a really big sting. You'll probably remember him as being the kid from Emporia. Hayden Pauls, a 3-star offensive tackle, picks Iowa State over K-State, and he's from Emporia. He's just an hour and 15 minutes south of Manhattan. And you felt, how do you lose a guy like Hayden Pauls? And a guy like him, you just don't find a lot of that talent in Kansas. Kansas City doesn't sting as much. You want the Kansas kids. Kansas City is just such a battleground that there's usually a decent amount of guys in there that you could probably pick your way through some. But anytime you lose to Iowa State in this kind of a recruiting battle, the sting, they're going to happen. You're going to win some battles. You're going to lose some battles. But when they start to pile up, then the negatives you take notice about. Iowa State might be better at recruiting.
Well, I think right now they are. If we're talking about like recruiting high school kids, like Iowa State is doing a better job. Again, with the head start and with the juice of what they've accomplished recently. K-State, meanwhile, stuck in what's going to be lifted, by the way. We're finding out now, like, visits will be allowed to actually happen. There was some news on that front today. But K-State's been stuck in this place where you can't bring people to visit, which is the biggest selling point of the campus. And, you know, you've been neutered a lot with that. Well, so has Iowa State, but they at least they have more recent on-field success to sell. K-State was coupled with not being able to bring kids in, lost Skylar Thompson. The season went to hell in a handbasket last year, and there's not been much juice. I mean, there's not much juice there. Now, I still have hopes that they're going to have a decent season next year, but there's not much juice, and Iowa State has a lot of it. And I just fear where this is going, and I mean, I hate it. I will tell you this, guys. Like yesterday I saw on Twitter, ESPN's football power index or whatever, it vomited out like 10 different college football playoff scenarios, and like two or three of them involved Iowa State. Now, you know, how many times did they actually run that, and were they waiting to get somebody like Iowa State that would drive some attention that would not be boring on Twitter? Hey, may well be true. The bottom line is it's out there on Twitter. And so like this year, Iowa State is going into their 1998. You remember K-State, 97 into 98. 97, they won the Fiesta Bowl, brought basically everybody back, including Michael Bishop, and it was all hype all year the next year. Like, this is going to be the year. This is Iowa State's 98. And they now have on Twitter projections of going to the college football playoff, and they're taking a recruit from you out of the Kansas City area. This is dangerous. Like, this is not a drill. I had quote tweeted that initially, and I was trying to come up with a joke, like a 7-5 joke or whatever, and I literally, this was even before Willich, and I just said, I'm not even going to do it. I'm past the point of doing that. Unless there's something that just really opens itself up to that, like I can't do it. I can't do it anymore because Iowa State has become too legitimate. I have to really back off, and I hate it, but that's where we're at.
Because you've tried to make the same joke 4 or 5 times. And this is no offense to you, but
well, the joke was great for a long time.
The material is getting stale.
No, the material is not stale. It's just they become too good.
Well,
the material was always great. Don't you come at my comedy.
Okay, the material is good, but it's not everybody's laughing. You're kind of getting some laughs, but it's not exactly the best joke you probably have in the arsenal. I've seen the comedy special 5 times already, John. I predicted the joke. It's time for some new material. And I'm also kind of making that into a, kind of in reference to what Iowa State has been doing lately. They're winning these recruiting battles against K-State. It's piling up to the point where, okay, yeah, the joke used to be funny, but now things are not changing. I'm hearing the same joke over and over again.
All right, no, you know what? Just for you, Mitch, I'll bump Kellis. We'll bump Kellis to the second hour. I'll play you in Iowa State 30 for 30 coming up next. You did this to yourself.
This is going to make me feel better?
You did this to yourself. Yeah, you're going to feel like an idiot because the material is still going to hold up and it'll be great. That's next. All right, Mitch challenged me today. Even on a day where I admit that I'm done and have been done, really, making fun of Iowa State on the reg, certainly their football program. Not that Jamie Pollard isn't still a dork, but he's invested big time in his football program. He's pumping in $3 million into assistant coach salaries. He got Matt Campbell signed up long term to an extension. He's turned down multiple NFL offers. And now today, Carson Willich, major target for the Cats in the Kansas City area, commits to Iowa State in the 2022 recruiting class. But the problem here, Mitch, it was never that my material was bad. But, you know, if you're making fun of somebody for a particular thing that they're not good at, and then all of a sudden they get good at it, well, then you can't make fun of them anymore. But it doesn't mean that I was a bad comic. It doesn't mean that, you know, comedy evolves. There are certain things that you can't touch now that would be touched back in the 60s or 70s or whatever. But it doesn't mean that Richard Pryor was not a good comic.
Oh, he was the man.
You know, maybe he has some material that wouldn't play now because things have changed and things have evolved, but it doesn't make him a bad comic. Ergo, I'm Richard Pryor, is what I'm saying, behind this microphone and behind these keys.
Well, personally, I think Don Rickles is the best stand-up comedian of all time, but I just want to just clear things up, and I want to tell you exactly what I meant by those comments. I did not say your material was bad. I've enjoyed it over the last couple of years. I think it's fantastic. But you're right. I just don't think it has aged well, especially after 45-0.
Right, but it was never meant to age. This was not about being timeless for all of eternity. You can't do that in college sports. You're always going to have to evolve with your material. Like, I will have to find the next target. I'll have to find the next thing to bash and make fun of. And, like, you know, Nebraska, for instance, opens itself up more now because they can't figure anything out, and they have Scott Frost, who's a total embarrassment. So maybe it starts to morph more toward that.
I'd be cool with that. I mean, Jabroni of the Week has been keeping its eye on Nebraska football for a couple of years now. It's basically on hoodie watch every single week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe Iowa State does come back down to earth at some point. Maybe it's a bad year this year, and I'll go all the way, all in back on it. But yes, right now, reading the room, the temperature is not great there to be making those moves. But it doesn't mean that there have not been some classics, some absolute classics in the 30 for 30 category about the Iowa State Cyclones. What if I told you that five losses is the new undefeated? That Ohio State doesn't hire coaches who have 24 losses in less than four seasons? That Iowa State's only nine-win season this century came with a 56-10 loss to Bill Snyder? What if I told you that Snyder is finally gone and K-State still had a better season than Iowa State? That even Paul Rhodes and Ron Prince had seven-win seasons? That Seneca Wallace ain't walking through that door? That even if he was, Bobby Walker would be right behind him?
And another pickoff by Bobby Walker! And another touchdown by Bobby Walker!
What if I told you that Jamal Tinsley lost to Hampton as a two seed? That was probably uncalled for? That I'm still not sorry? ESPN's 30 for 30 presents The Strive for Nine. Well, maybe eight. Okay, never mind seven. The Strive for Seven. Saturdays this fall on ESPN. I can't even help but laugh. I mean, it's such great material that I still laugh. And you know what? Some of that still does hold up, all right? The Bobby Walker line, that will always hold up. Never going away. Back-to-back pick sixes thrown to Bobby Walker in a span of three plays.
Just for reference, do you have it marked anywhere when that originally aired?
It looks like December 3rd of 2019, so it would have been right after.
Damn, that's old.
Well, it's because it was right after the win. Like, K-State beat Iowa State in the season finale. And then, oh, poor John of December 3rd, 2019. Yeah, poor John. About to happen was K-State was getting screwed out of Orlando, probably as that was playing. Thank you to Jamie Pollard. But that doesn't mean that was not Nails material. And this one, you know, I mean, this one's a little more niche. I will admit that. This is a little more niche because this was not that big of a story at the time, but we were so starved for content. It was in the middle of the COVID dry spell where we went 133 days without sports and nothing's happening. It was July 28th, 2020, and Iowa State had replaced Iowa with Ball State on their non-conference schedule. So that's the premise for this one. What if I told you that the Strive for Nine gained new life because of COVID-19? That the most elite young coach in college football doesn't have to worry about losing to his racist in-state rival for a fifth straight year. That the pure poetry of Matt Campbell finding yet another way to sneak five losses onto his resume will have to wait another year. That if you squint really, really hard and you're colorblind, that Cardinal logo on the Ball State helmets actually looks kind of like a Hawkeye. Sort of. Right? That as the old saying goes, if you can't beat them, hope that a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic rips through the country and the U.S. becomes the worst industrialized nation at fighting the virus because of incompetent leadership and the ever-evolving hyper-partisan society we live in today. And then the Big Ten jumps the gun on canceling the non-conference schedule. That this game is a bigger cream puff snowflake than Ball State football's most famous alum, Jason Whitlock. ESPN's 30 for 30 presents The Strive for COVID-19, a Matt Campbell story. Saturdays, this fall. Hopefully, maybe, we don't know. Ask us in mid-August on ESPN.
I mean, come on. I crack myself up with that one.
Nothing better than the guy that laughs at his own jokes.
But that was so funny, and I forgot about that line completely.
Incompetent leadership.
Okay.
It's the gun on canceling the non-conference schedule.
I got to hear the Whitlock line again, man.
That this game is a bigger cream puff snowflake than Ball State football's most famous alum, Jason Whitlock. ESPN's 30 for 30 presents
The Strive for
COVID-19, a Matt Campbell story.
There's
Saturdays
this
fall.
Just go. Just trample it. That's fine.
We don't know. Ask us in mid-August on ESPN.
There is just serious irony if you look at how everything finished for Iowa State this year. They finished with 9 wins, and they finished at number 9 in both the AP and coaches poll. It was meant to be. 9 is the theme, and 9 was the theme for Iowa State football this year. But now, what's the joke now? How do you continue on with poking fun at Iowa State after they totally just kicked you in the fellas 45-0?
Okay.
Just stick with basketball?
That's all well and good. That's all well and good, Mitch.
I mean, now they're going above and beyond. They're trying to go for double digits. I mean, there's material there if they don't get there.
All right. I get the point. I do. But Jason Whitlock is still a Mitch. Shane Southwell talk coming up next.
Johnny was a schoolboy when he heard his first Beatles song.
You guys out here all think the transfer portal is bad. Not only is my man Shane Southwell recruiting the hell out of it, and we'll talk more about him in just a second, but also it gives us terrific comedy like this. Follow me here. New Cincinnati head coach Wes Miller had a quote at his opening press conference where he said, "I am single and don't have any children, so I expect to be married to the program."
I thought he was just airing out. He's putting out a public Tinder profile for just a moment.
No, but hang on. That's not the punchline, not even close. Somebody on Twitter takes it and says, "Not married. This man clearly can't recruit." And then somebody responded and said, "Well, was married. I don't know who opted out." So then, remember this guy's name was Wes Miller. Somebody named Ashley Love Miller responds to it and says, "I entered the transfer portal," with the little woman going like this.
Oh, damn. That, man. You can't recover from that.
That is tough. You're right. That's a tough, tough, tough one to recover from. She looks very attractive, by the way, from her photo. So that is difficult for one Wes Miller. But that's the thing. Like, he's just trying to make a nice colloquialism, just a little quip there, and all of a sudden it gets turned back around because of social media. The good that it can do to you and the bad that it can do to you. And, man, of course, the ex is lurking around waiting to pounce.
Yeah, every time he sees the words transfer portal or hears the words, you know what he's going to think of for the rest of the transfer portal era.
You think that one tweet will stick with him for the rest of the transfer portal era, which is probably the rest of his head coaching career?
That's a third-degree burn.
It is. It is.
He might be scarred for life.
But maybe, Mitch, he's in a – just to play devil's advocate here, what if he's in a good place? He's fine with the divorce. He says he's married to the program, married to the game, as you might say. He's moved on. He's past it. He's okay. He's all right. He's a survivor. He doesn't need to be worried about that. Would that really bother him?
Easy to say on the outside looking in. I mean, when you take a shot like that, it's a personal level – You know the person that's, and it's all towards you, and this is in an open format. The whole world can see it. You know you just got burned. It stings a lot worse if it happens to you.
I think we're assuming, perhaps incorrectly, that this is just a broken, beaten down man, and maybe he's stronger than yesterday. I think that's a Britney Spears quote. I believe. And I wish I could remember the next line or I would say it right now. Maybe that's where he's at and he's in a good spot. I'm just saying I'm sticking up for Wes Miller a little bit here, even though that was hilarious. And we got that out of the way. Shout out also to Ashley Love Miller for giving us that wonderful tweet. So Derek and I did talk some Shane Southwell. I think it's very clear to me that rising star or not, whether you buy full into Rob Cassidy, who's now the national basketball recruiting guru for Rivals.com. If you buy fully into his tweet, which was that somebody who's very well connected in a gym in New York recently told him that Shane Southwell is a rising star, I don't think you need to even be bought in on that to get the whole point here and what Shane has done with this recruiting class. By landing three of the five, now Maximus Edwards, he has to prove it to me. I'm not all that excited about, but the two transfers, I am, in Ishmael Massoud and Marquise Noel, both New York kids that Shane recruited. What Shane has done is proven himself to be a worthy Division I assistant, which at his age, like right or wrong, at his age, you know, if you're a 29-year-old full-time assistant coach at a Power 5 school, that's atypical. You're young. You've got to earn your stripes. You've got to prove that you've got the chops to do the job. And what Shane has proven is that he absolutely belongs. It doesn't need to go any further than that. It doesn't, I think, need to be, hey, rising star, let's anoint this guy and put a bunch of pressure on him and think that, hey, he's going to be a head coach in 10 years. Like, I don't think we need to go down that road yet. It's still so early in his coaching career. But when you are that young, it's going to turn some heads when you get hired, especially at a Power 5 school. Like, okay, go prove yourself at Robert Morris, that's one thing. But you get hired at Kansas State, a place that has been in the Elite Eight, won Big 12 championships here recently under this coach. That definitely turned some heads. And I'll admit, like, I love Shane to death. Love Shane to death and could definitely see the recruiting potential there with him. Very charismatic, personable guy. But, like, I needed to see it proven. I needed to see that. And the way recruiting had gone recently with this program, K-State needed some extra juice. And what Shane provided was, and I know that I've said that a lot today because I was talking about Iowa State with that, but Shane provided some juice. And Shane provided a push in the right direction, which is the modern direction of college basketball, which is, hey, get in the portal. Utilize the connections that you have to pull in valuable assets and valuable pieces that have already proven that they can hack it at this level, which is what's happened with Noel and Massoud. Like, that they're capable enough of Massoud scoring 31 and Noel of being an all-conference player, first team all-league. That's what you need to do. You know, his guy, we have great insight coming up from Kellis in hour two, where he's going to tell you about, like, how long Shane had been after Maximus Edwards. And that's really, like, his guy. He's been a huge fan of him for a long time and never thought he was going to be able to actually land him at Robert Morris when he started recruiting because he thought he'd be too good. So this is Shane's guy. We'll see. I mean, that can, if he hits on that and he was actually right about that, then maybe we're talking, like, total rising star. Like, we can. But for right now, what I know is he went out and landed three pieces, two of which K-State desperately needed for this upcoming year. And in doing so, it was not just that mere act. He also showed that he has a mind and a brain for where the game is going and evolving, which is something that this coaching staff desperately needs because Bruce is fighting this at every turn, the transfer portal era. Shane is not. Shane is young. Shane gets it. Shane understands. And now has proven that he's also capable of following through on that understanding and going and landing kids. So that's what's happened here with Shane. I don't think we need to go cart before the horse. I don't think we need to do the fan thing and be like, wow, is this guy going to be the next head coach at some or the head coach at some point? Like, just don't put the pressure on him. Just know that Shane's going to be in the game. Shane's going to be in the game, and he's going to be an assistant for a long time, and that's awesome. Would love for it to be here forever. If it's not going to be, he's got a huge fan in me. And the more of your alums and your people that you can get out there doing big things, the better. Who knows what comes around someday because of that. Better exposure for everybody. And so this has been nothing but good. I'm thrilled to see Shane doing it, and the program absolutely needed it.
I would call him a wunderkind. He's young enough. He's 29 years old. He's already been a full-time assistant at Robert Morris, which let's remember, that team was a 20-win team, went to the NCAA tournament as an automatic bid. They won their conference tournament championship. So his 1 year there, they were very successful. I think Shane, though, he is right now, he's recruiting in a comfort zone because he's from New York, and the guys that he's bringing in are from New York. I mean, I almost kind of feel like we're kind of jumping back into the Frank Martin era with the New York guys that are coming in.
Well, when he recruited Shane Southwell out of Rice High School in Harlem.
Exactly. But he obviously has some ties that I think could really benefit K-State. I know he won't be a K-Stater forever. He's somebody I'm going to miss whenever he does take that next job. But I'm glad K-State is going to benefit from Shane Southwell while he's here because, like I said the other day, you know, Masood, I'm not exactly convinced with yet, but Noel, I think he's going to be a big part of this team, and who knows about Maximus Edwards yet. So Shane is in the process of still proving himself, but I would almost call him not a rising star, but a shooting star, because he is on the rise. I think it's happening, though, quicker for him than it is for a lot of assistants out there.
Well, probably, but I don't even... I just caution, like, people with when you anoint someone like a rising star like that, I just, you know, I mean, like, I feel like the same thing happened, like, to Colin Klein. People saw him go to Northern Iowa and then come back here, and everybody, especially when it's somebody that played for your school, like, you want so badly for them to, like, get up to speed and be the guy and be the next coach, and we don't need to do that here with Shane. He is still 29. There's plenty of time. Let's see how this plays out. Right now, K-State can really utilize what it is that he's doing, including recruiting New York City, which, Mitch, you bring up a great point. Like, yeah, you have to you want to recruit nationally, and you want to be able to flex your recruiting muscles wherever it is. But, like, if there's a place that you can specialize in recruiting, I would love it to be New York.
Oh, yeah.
Give me New York kids. I was trying to remember, like, is it Curtis Redding? Like, K-State has had some – K-State has had a stud or two from New York even, like, back in the old school days. So – Curtis Kelly's rolled through here from New York, been awesome. Obviously, Shane Southwell was pretty good. Like
J.O.
Jordan Enriquez. There have been some dudes, and those guys play with an attitude. I mean, that's a lot of what I see in Marquise Noel that I really like about him. They bring a certain swagger, a certain attitude. So I'm very much here for it all the way around. Just don't, like, let's watch the, like, wunderkind. Like, just, can't he just be, right now he's a capable, good assistant coach and doing it at a young age. And that's great. That's great, because like you said, not many people can say that. Just don't put too much pressure on the guy. That's all I'm asking for.
I think he'll be fine, John. He can handle the pressure.
Okay.
He's already a full-time assistant at the Power 5 level.
All right. Well, let me tell you about something that you'll be surprised to hear from me next. I hate it when you play this song. I really do.
Why?
I don't like it.
Oh, I love it. I love the saxophone. I think it's the greatest saxophone opening all time.
Don't like Careless Whisper, but...
Sorry, Baker Street.
You know, I mean, I suppose that could describe, Mitch, my newfound love affair with the Royals. I'm buying in now, man. I'm watching a lot of Royals baseball. Listen, we went through a rough patch. I became very disinterested. It worked out really well to be disinterested as a bit because, you know, Mason loves the Royals far too much. But this is fun. Like, having competitive baseball, first-place team here in April... Like, looking up and down the roster and being like, I feel like this team can actually compete to be, you know, at least like a 500 team this year. There are some sneaky, like, 2013-ish vibes to this team. Remember, that team was, like, they didn't make the playoffs, but they hovered around 500, made a nice push at the end of the year. They had that, was it, God, what was that guy's name? Like, Justin Maxwell? Hit the monster home run at the end of the year to win a game. Anyway, it like set the stage for 2014 and 2015, where there were some young, exciting players on the come up. And I feel that way right now about this Royals team. Like, I'm jumping back in. Bandwagon, baby. I've been a lifelong Royals fan, but you pay more attention some years as opposed to others. And it's when you can start sniffing around that something may be happening. 2003 as a kid, like, you know, I went to Royals games before that when I had moved there, but 2003, they get hot. Angel Barroa looks like the best player in the bigs. I can start to sniff that. I'm like, all right, well, I'll start to do more than just look at the box score in the paper in the morning. Let me start tuning in to Bob Davis on the Royals television network on good old RSTN and make sure that I'm watching more of the Royals. Then, you know, 2013, I could start to feel it. It was like, all right, hey, this team's doing something. You know, after the, like, post James Shields trade, it was like, okay, they mean business. You have my attention. I will now start to watch. I have no shame in admitting that that is how my Royals fandom has always gone. But when I got in really hard, baby. 2014 and 2015, some of the best moments of my life watching that Royals playoff run. I've had few happier moments in my life than like those playoff runs, and that is not a joke. That is no joke at all. It was a blast. So I am just declaring officially here that I am jumping back into my Royals fandom. 2 feet in. I don't know if that means we're going to talk like a ton of specifics about the Royals on the show necessarily. Whenever I deem it to be entertaining enough to come here to our audience over the summer, I will do that. I actually think there is some potential here to like bring Mason back every once in a while and, you know, mess with him. Because I gave him so much crap for so long of caring so much about this team when I was just flippantly disinterested. So I'm open to your thoughts, Mitch. I'm open to anybody's thoughts. You can tweet me at J.O. Kurtz. You can call me a bandwagon fan. Call me whatever it is that you want. But my interests are vast these days, and my options are equally as vast, if not more vast. So you have to work for my attention. 7-4 start. Young pitching talent up and coming. A lineup now that looks very formidable. You have my attention. You have worked and earned my attention, Kansas City Royals.
I don't have much to say because you've admitted you are a bandwagon fan. It's hard to go after you when you've admitted that
exactly.
You're a fair weather fan. You will only go for the Royals. I mean, that it doesn't make me feel like you're a true fan, but hey, welcome back, I suppose. But I guess the only question I have is, what does it take for you to be off the bandwagon? Is it going to take a 5-game losing streak and you're gone again? Or
no, I'd say, what would be the cutoff there? Like, you know, if they wind up like 15 games under 500 at some point this season, that perhaps, I'll make that my barometer for right now. Kelis Robinette is coming up next. Does he think this is a tournament team?